This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. What is your bedtime ritual? Now, I'm not trying to get really personal here. I'm just talking about, do you read a little bit till you get drowsy and the book slips from your hands, or maybe it's the screen of a smartphone you're staring at? Or do you like to fall asleep to music? Perhaps the soothing sounds of white noise. That is kind of soothing. How about the thumming engine of an icebreaker trapped in a snowstorm? Oh, if you like low noises, that would work for you, huh? Very soothing. Sounds like those, including the iconic summer rain, can be found in a growing number of apps. And Silicon Valley technologists think they have the solution to your sleep problems. Because in addition to sleep tracking apps and smartwatches, there are bedside devices, special robotic animals that share the bed with you, self-cooling pillows, headbands that measure and adjust your brain waves, many of them promising to give you a better night's rest. But do they work? And is there much science behind the sales pitch? And if you use any of these apps or gadgets yourself, we want to hear from you. Our number, 844-724-8255. You can tweet us at SciFry. And speaking of numbers, a quick correction. Earlier in the program, we gave you out a phone number for our Science Friday book club reading of Frankenstein, and I gave it out with one digit off. Hello, really? You're surprised? The correct number is 567-243-2456. That's for the Frankenstein book. 567-243-2456. Our apologies to the guy with that one-digit different number. Sorry about that. But let's continue here talking about these sleep apps. Angela Chen is a science reporter at The Verge here in New York who reported on all that snazzy sleep gadgets at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas last week. She joins us here in our studios in New York. Welcome.
Thank you.
Sorry, Friday. Jamie Zeitzer is a sleep scientist and associate professor at Stanford and the VA Palo Alto Healthcare System. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks for having me.
Angela, you were, as I say, you were just at the Consumer Electronics Show and you saw a lot of sleep gadgets. Big business, huh?
Definitely. It's been growing a lot, especially, I'd say, in the past 5 years.
Let's talk about some of the things that you saw. One was the Sleep Score Max, something that sits on your nightstand.
Mm-hmm. It sits on your nightstand, and the idea is that it can track you without you having to do anything. You know, unlike an app that you have to, you know, put in your bed or a wristwatch that you have to wear, it looks like a gray speaker. You put it on your nightstand, and essentially using radio waves, it can detect motion, and then it'll tell you a sleep score in that way.
Now, what's the idea? What does a sleep score mean? How well you were sleeping?
Yeah, how well you were sleeping, which essentially here means how much you tossed and turned during the night.
And Jamie, would using radio waves give you anything better than a wrist tracker?
Well, the data that I've seen indicates that, yeah, it's a little better than a wrist tracker. It's reasonably accurate in terms of picking up, you know, when you're asleep, when you're awake.
Mm-hmm. And Angela, another thing you saw is something called the Dream Light, a sleep mask. How does that work?
Right. So that's actually something my colleague saw, and she got to try for 3 nights. So to be fair, she really liked it. It's this big, bulky thing, and it has, and it wakes you up by pulsing light into your eyes instead of, you know, setting an alarm clock with an app. So, you know, there's a gyroscope. It's really bulky. She couldn't even lie flat on it, but she liked it, I'll have to say.
And what did it do for her? I mean, what was the point?
She said that so she actually does track her sleep. And then she told me that for what it's worth, it told her that she slept really well that night. And I think the main draw was that it woke her up in this so-called natural way with, you know, light instead of some kind of alarm.
Dr. Zeitzer, is there any such thing as genetic data that helps you sleep better?
Well, I wish there were. It would make my life a lot easier. But yeah, there's reasonable genetic data to indicate that there's variation in how people sleep, but the contribution is really quite small and really outweighed by people's behaviors and by their environment.
And what does it actually mean to give you biofeedback? Is it altering your brain waves? What does that mean? Let's start with another question. Let me go to Angela first. You tried the Dream with two E's. The Dream headset. It's a pretty pricey device that gives you brainwaves measuring back.
So let me say what it's trying to improve on. So the problem with all of these sensors is that they're basically just, you know, they're monitoring your movement, and that's not really a perfect proxy. Like, you can not move very much, but still, you know, sleep terribly. And what the Dream is trying to do is actually record your brain waves. So the idea is it's headset, you put it on while you're sleeping, and then the electrode will record brain activity, and then it'll actually kind of tell you, you know, what's happening, so you can kind of train yourself to sleep more.
You mean tell you what's happening as you're sleeping?
I think more as you're, you know, drifting off to sleep. I imagine they're not going to bother you if you're actually, you know, in the midst of deep sleep.
And Dr. Seitzer, what does that mean? I mean, what are they trying to do there?
Well, so it's basically, it's recording your brainwave activity and then using sound to amplify a certain waveform, which is called delta activity. Hmm. It's basically, it's an oscillation, kind of a variation in the brain that's anywhere between 4 times per second and once every 2 seconds. And this is something that tracks the amount of prior wakefulness pretty well. And so the idea basically is that you've got a lot of this delta activity in the beginning of the night, and as you sleep, you dissipate this delta activity. And so, you know, the theory out there is that if you can increase the amount of delta activity using, in this case, sound waves, that you can actually dissipate the delta faster and therefore need less sleep.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned before about all the other gadgets you saw or your team saw at the show. There are also temperature-regulating pillows, plush sleeping robots, and stuff you actually sleep with in your bed, sleeping with you.
So the plush robot, it's made by a company called Somnox. And it looks kind of like I would say it's shaped like a peanut. It's kind of hard. And the idea is that you would spoon it kind of the way you would with, you know, your partner. And then you can program it to breathe in and out. And then, you know, as it breathes in and out, you will also breathe in and out, and it'll, you know, kind of soothe you into relaxation. I saw it. My colleague tried it for a few nights, and then she said it reminded her of her boyfriend's cat. And then she said that, you know, it wasn't bad. It seemed to help her sleep. But then it seems like, I think, breathing exercises might also do the same thing.
And the temperature-regulating pillows, they actually change temperature, or you can set them yourself?
That's something that I wrote about and I tried, and it has essentially there are a lot of tubes inside it, and it's connected to what is basically a water tank, and then you can change it so you know it's hot and cold. You can change it yourself, and then it also has sensors that will tell you, again using motion, how well you slept, and so over time it'll kind of adjust. You know, maybe last night you tossed more at this temperature. You know, this now, I'm going to try a different temperature.
Yeah, now, so someone who has trouble going to sleep, I know there are a lot of different sleep apps. Anything new that you saw out there? Can you give us a quick overview?
I don't think there's really anything new. I think they all usually work the same way, you know, tracking sound and motion. And they all sound the same, so they're blurred together in my mind. They're all like Sleep Cycle, Sleep Timer, Sleep Genius. I think you get the pattern.
Yeah, no.
Pillow.
I just go for the water, the rain, the summer rain for me. Now, there are a lot of gadgets and apps that are monitoring sleep. And Dr. Seitzer, from your perspective as a sleep scientist, is there any real data that they actually improve sleep, these things?
I'd like to say yes, but there isn't a lot of data out there. There's a lot of promise. There's a lot of theory. But most of the devices that track sleep don't actually give particularly useful feedback about your sleep and how to change it. It's one of the major things that are lacking amongst these different kinds of apps and devices. And in terms of the apps that kind of adjust sleep using sound or, you know, you like the rain falling, again, different people are going to respond to different things. And right now, it's kind of a crapshoot in terms of what works.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to the phones, because people, of course, are interested in this. Emily in Ogden, Utah. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
So this got me thinking about the noise machine that I was using for my child from, you know, after she was born. We used it for the first maybe year, and then my husband started reading about studies that maybe link a later occurrence of autism, and you know, we stopped using it just for other reasons too, to get her to be able to put herself to sleep and not need it. But I just wondered if anybody had heard of any negative effects for children's developing brains.
Dr. Seitzer, any?
Well, I mean, you hit on the main negative thing, which is that, you know, in general, you want to have people fall asleep without any crutch. And, you know, if you're creating an artificial environment that's not going to be always present, that's going to make it potentially more difficult, depending on who the child is and how they naturally sleep and if they're a good sleeper or not. Mm-hmm. And you definitely don't want to get someone used to doing something like that that might not always be available.
How would you create an experiment, scientists to test out whether these gadgets are working? I mean, there are so many different factors, Dr. Seitzer. What do you need? How do you limit that?
Well, I don't know if you limit it or you kind of you kind of regale in the variability, which is that you can basically have what's going on right now, which is just a huge number of people trying out different things. And the question becomes, you know, can you combine this? Can you basically look across these various devices and various people and see if there are commonalities? And, you know, one of the problems is that we don't know right now how to record what sleep quality is. Like, how do we say that someone got a good night of sleep or not? Right now, we're limited to really just how people say they slept. And what that relates to, that's a kind of a separate issue.
But there are also things about when they last ate, when they last drank, all kinds of issues like
sure.
that.
Sure, and this is what I think is kind of the critical thing that's missing is, you know, kind of combining across all of these different, you know, behaviors and environmental factors. You know, can you basically take this all in and determine in a single individual what's really impacting their sleep? You know, so someone might have a cup of coffee at night, and that might not matter to them. Someone else might have a cup of coffee with lunch, and it's going to mess up their sleep. So it's really that kind of personalization that's going to matter.
But Angela, wouldn't this be a great opportunity to crowdsource my devices? In other words, the companies are always asking you, do you mind if I send the data back to, you know, the iPhone or whatever, Apple, whoever it is? Wouldn't this not be an opportunity to collect hundreds of thousands of people's experiences and then maybe monitor, crowdsource it, and find out some useful information?
I think it could. I think, as Dr. Seitzer said, it's also, you know, really individual. I personally cannot drink any coffee whatsoever. I'll never sleep again. And another thing is, I think that, you know, smartphones and apps, they're also just not good at tracking data themselves.
Right.
You know, there have been a lot of studies saying Fitbit's not good at, you know, telling your heart rate. When it comes to self-reported food data, we know that's pretty inaccurate if you even bother to do it. At the same time, I think, you know, if we are able to have a sleep app that tries to integrate what we do have of this, it can be helpful by creating, you know, a bigger picture. And, you know, what I'm fairly skeptical of sleep apps, but what I think they might be good for is, regardless of whether you're actually in deep sleep, from night to night, it can probably show you what your patterns and habits are.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International, talking about sleep and apps. Now, Dr. Seitzer, I know that you've studied how brief flashes of light could help people pre-adjust to jet lag. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this was kind of an accidental finding that came from animals. But, yeah, we find that brief flashes of light, so basically think of like a camera flash. And if you give this kind of flash while people are sleeping, it goes through the eyelids. And if you give this flash around once every 10 seconds or so, it is about 3 times more powerful than continuous light. And, you know, light is the thing that's adjusting your internal circadian clock, your internal, you know, timer to your time zone. And so you can think of, you know, when you're jet lagged, basically this is the time when light exposure is kind of adjusting this internal clock to fit with your new schedule. And so basically using these brief flashes of light, we can do this while people are sleeping and in advance of their travel.
Even while it goes through their eyelids, the light? Others?
Yeah, it goes through the eyelids and doesn't impact the sleep. I mean, some people are very sensitive to light and this doesn't work in them because it'll wake them up. But for most people, it goes through the eyelids, doesn't wake them up, and changes the time of the brain, or the time the brain thinks it is, without them kind of being aware of it.
Do you think that Silicon Valley, Jamie, can beat evolution at sleep?
No, not at all. You know, a few hundred million years of evolution, I think, trumps Silicon Valley. but we're basically taking advantage of something which I think is kind of an accidental piece of biology. This is not something which naturally occurs. This kind of regularity in flashes doesn't occur, so there wouldn't have been any sort of natural selection for this particular process. And in essence, what we're doing is we're taking kind of advantage of the existing biology and creating this illusion to the brain to get a much more powerful stimulus into the brain and get a much bigger change.
Mm-hmm. Angela, was there any device that you really, that really impressed you, the sleep devices?
Sleep devices. You know what? I don't think there is. You know, after seeing so many different devices, I still think that in the end, they're not going to give you really exciting advice. The truth is, I know what I should be doing. You know, I know I should be going to sleep at the same time every day and, you know, probably not stressing myself out before sleep so I, you know, don't get all anxious. I don't need a device to tell me that.
Dr. Zeitzer is a sleep scientist. You must have excellent sleep habits, right?
This is why we get into the field, because we all have bad sleep. No, you know, look, people have varying degrees of bad sleep. And, you know, one of the problems is that, you know, we as, you know, in the sleep field, you know, we can say it's great to get, you know, 8 hours of sleep per night. But for a lot of people, that's just not feasible. And so the thing that we're struggling with is to try to understand, well, you know, is there a secondary suggestion? You know, can we say that you can get, you know, if you get 1 out of 3 nights, mm-hmm. you know, what does that do for you? And this is something that, you know, I think we all struggle with in trying to understand how to improve sleep mm-hmm. Kind of at a societal level.
Yeah, well, I hope we haven't put our audience to sleep this discussion. soporific, one of my favorite words in the vocabulary. Well, thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Angela Chen, science reporter at The Verge, and Jamie Seitzer, sleep scientist, associate professor at Stanford University, and the VA Palo Alto Healthcare System.